Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to News from the Torah. This is Leah Haroni. Today is the 13th day of the Hebrew month of Tishrei, September 19th, 2021, and this week we will not be reading the Torah portion, Vizod the Bracha. This is the blessing. It is the portion of this week, but we will not be reading it this week on Shabbat. We will actually be reading it next week on Simchat Torah, and we'll talk about that more during the show. So we just finished Yom Kippur. We spent a whole day fasting, praying, reflecting, recommitting to our values, recommitting to the service of God. We spent 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur really looking back at our actions and thinking how to be better, to grow spiritually in the coming year. And now, after all that hard work, we are in for a 7-day or 8-day holiday in outside of Israel, of Sukkot, which is just about joy. It is called in the Torah the time of your joy, the time of your happiness. This is what we call it during our prayers. This is the point of the holiday. 7 days of joy and happiness when we just do things to feel uplifted, to feel inspired, to feel connected to God. And with this joy, we can do just as much as we did with the fasting of Yom Kippur. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk today about the specific mitzvot of the holiday, the commandments of the holiday, the commandment of building a sukkah, and the commandment of having the four species. What do these mean? And what is their deepest spiritual meaning? And we'll talk about a very important point that is driven home by this holiday, the trust in God. And how, especially during these days, and with everything happening in Israel, and we'll talk about that in depth, with everything happening in Israel, as the trust in government is falling apart, it is so important for us to recommit to our trust in God, because really, we have nobody else to trust. So all that right after these messages. Please stay put. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you very, very soon.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back. So as we near the holiday of Sukkot, a major theme of this holiday is trust. On Sukkot, we'll leave our abodes, our homes, and we go out into a little hut that is only roofed with leaves and branches. Only tree-made material is good enough for that. It lets the wind in, it lets the rain in, it lets the elements in. And the whole point of this mitzvah, of this commandment, is to stay outside for a week in this hut that is mandated by God as a sign of our trust in God. And I think this message of trusting God has never been as relevant as it is today. Over the past several weeks here in Israel, we have been witnessing an amazing show of unraveling in government's trust. The government is becoming less and less and less trustworthy in everything that comes in contact with the vaccine. It pushes one line only, vaccinate, 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 while much of the evidence is actually pointing in the opposite direction. And all of this came to a head yesterday night after the FDA refused to approve the booster shot for the third shot of the vaccine. So it started out about a month ago when the Prime Minister Bennett was quoted as saying in one of the government meetings that the point of the green pass, the vaccination pass, is not necessarily epidemiologically safe and correct, but rather it is used to pressure people into vaccination. Then 2 weeks ago, in a hot mic accident, the Minister of the Interior, Chaquette, and the Minister of Health, Horowitz, were recorded in a conversation where Horowitz told Chaquette that many of the green pass, the vaccination passport measures, are not medically motivated, but are motivated once again to pressure people into vaccinating. For example, Israelis currently cannot go to a cafe or a restaurant if they're not vaccinated. And that includes not just indoor dining, but outdoor dining as well. So Horowitz told Chaquette that this mandate of requiring people to be vaccinated in order to enjoy outdoor dining has no medical reason. And the only reason it has been mandated is to pressure people into vaccinating. Same for going to the pool, and same for many other of the measures. But now Israel approved a third booster shot almost 2 months ago, rolling it out first for people in their 60s, and then slowly all the way up to teens. And the Israelis have been told that by 1st of October, if you do not have your third booster shot, you are not considered vaccinated, and you will not be able to enjoy any of the freedoms given you by the immunization record, by this immunization green pass. This includes people who have two shots. If you have two shots but have not had your third shot, you're not allowed to go into a concert, into a museum, into a pool, into a gym, into a restaurant, into many of the government buildings. You can basically maybe go to the mall. That's the only place you can go without the immunization record. And moreover, people who have recovered from COVID, people who are recovered, are not considered to be recovered unless they get a shot, which really is questionable because the Maccabi Health Fund put out a study that of 2.5 million Israelis showing that actually having COVID protects you 27 times more than having a shot. So all of this is questionable, and all of this has made Israelis really question the trustworthiness of the government. But it really blew up yesterday because the FDA was faced with the question of whether they authorize the third immunization shot, the booster shot. And presented with the evidence, the FDA rejected the third booster shot, except for the 65 plus age group and people at risk. And the FDA actually questioned the safety of the booster shot for people ages 16 to 29. So what this means is that Israel has been giving the third booster shot without FDA approval for the past 2 months. And now FDA has withdrawn this approval. So what would be the next logical step in your mind? The logical step would be for the Israelis to say, okay, we may have made a mistake, or we're going to look at this data again, or we're going to take the FDA recommendations and lack of approval and do our math again. All of that would have been fine. All of those would have been reasonable ways for the government to act. But the government decided to do something completely different. And from Prime Minister Bennett down to the Ministry of Health, what they did was spin the story. And what's the spin? The spin is actually this. The United States is following Israel's lead in approving the booster shot for the population. And not only that, the FDA is giving the booster shot to a much wider audience than Israel did initially. All of which is obviously not true. And it's really ridiculous that the Israeli government thinks that it can put out such spin and the population will not notice, because all of our media is full of reports of the FDA rejecting the booster shot. So I'm thinking to myself, what are they thinking? What are they thinking? And this is in addition to another story that just came out this past weekend. Pfizer executives have been referring to Israel as the world's lab for months now. And last week, the Ministry of Health branded this report fake news, because Israel doesn't use just Pfizer vaccines, it also uses Moderna vaccines. So there is no exclusivity for Pfizer, and therefore it's not a lab, and we're not doing any kind of clinical trial for Pfizer. But what came out this week is that Israel used 11 million Pfizer vaccines and just under 120. Yes, not 120,000, 120, 120 Moderna vaccines, which effectively means that Pfizer is the only vaccine being used in Israel. And yes, Israel is Pfizer's lab. But of course, when presented with this data, the Ministry of Health official had nothing useful to say and just said, yeah, but we're not doing a trial. We're not having any kind of exclusivity with Pfizer. We also use Moderna. No, you don't. So all of this is making Israelis question the trustworthiness of the Israeli government. And you know what? It aligns exactly with what the Torah tells us will happen in the end of days. In the Talmud, in the Tractate of Sotah, at the very end, on page 49, the rabbis tell us what will the end of day looks like. What will happen before Mashiach comes, before Messiah comes? And this is what they say. In the times of the approach of the Messiah, impudence will increase and high costs will pile up. And the monarchy shall turn to heresy, and there will be no one to give reproof about this. Okay, and I'm skipping a little bit more. And the wisdom of scribes will putrefy, and people who fear sin will be held in disgust, and the truth will be absent. And we have nobody else to rely on except our Father in heaven. So we're seeing exactly this play out. The government is turning into heresy. The government is literally lying to us. And it's doing so with complete impudence, with what we Israelis called chutzpah. They don't even want to try to save face anymore. They're just straight lying to us, thinking that we will buy this. And there's nobody to give reproach to, because there's nobody who's willing to speak out. The Israeli doctor, Dr. Rivka Karmi, who is the past president of the Ben-Gurion University, one of the leading universities in Israel, came out with a video telling parents that corona is not a childhood disease and therefore there is no reason to vaccinate children. And what happened was that she got a threatening letter from the Ministry of Health that she is misleading the public and that she will be investigated for misleading the public. So people are scared to speak up, except on social media. But if you would go to the Ministry of Health page and look at the posts that they keep boosting, you will find one after another, thousands of angry and ridiculing comments with the public not buying anything that the Ministry of Health has to say. So the truth is absent. The government is lying. It is doing so with impunity, and we really have nobody to rely on. The only one we have to rely on is God. And which brings us back to the holiday of Sukkot. We really need to establish this line of trust with God. We cannot rely on the government to protect us. We cannot rely on the scientific community to protect us, because whatever information the scientific community is putting out is being manipulated to serve a certain agenda. And I'm not saying, by the way, you should not vaccinate or you should vaccinate. This is a personal decision based on your risk factors. I'm just putting out information about the fact that the medical and scientific information we're getting is being manipulated to fit different agendas, by the government and that the government is no longer telling us the truth. So this is the time to reestablish our line of trust with God. There's no better time to do that than on the holiday of Sukkot, where we go out of our homes, into the sukkah, into the whatever elements are around us, and tell God, we trust you. You are the only one we can trust, especially when the world is going crazy the way it is. We know you're doing this for our good, for global good. More about that right after the break.
Hi, I'm Steve Miller.
And I'm Matt Zucker.
Join us for Lighten Up, where we take a look at the week's current events in Israel and from around the Jewish world through a humorous lens.
If you've been paying attention during these crazy times, you know that it's a challenge to parody life anymore. But join Steve and I as we give it the old college try. Not only is being happy an obligation, but life is just too short to take it all so seriously.
So join me, Steve Miller.
And me, Matt Zucker.
For Lighten Up every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Israel, only on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back. So in the first segment, we touched upon the concept of the sukkah, and I want to talk about it a little bit more in this segment. We'll start to celebrate the holiday of Sukkot this Monday night, and it continues for 7 days. And after that, right away, we have the holiday of Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah. So you may be familiar with the laws of sukkah. I will touch on them briefly for people who don't know what a sukkah is or how to build one and they may want one. And then I want to go into more of a metaphysical explanation, a spiritual explanation of why sukkah is so important. So a sukkah is a structure that you have to build under open skies, not under a roof, not under a tree, under open skies. It has to have two walls. And the walls could be permanent walls. Let's say you can use a wall of your house, you can use your fence, or you can put up a wall from 2x4s, or you can even put up a wall from fabric that is stretched between two poles. And it has to have two full walls, and a third wall has to be three hand breadth. So the idea, as explained by the rabbis, it's like a hug. It is like God hugging you. When you hug somebody, you have the part of your arm from your shoulder to your elbow, and then from the elbow to the hand joint. And then you have your hand. Your hand is just like a little piece sticking out. So this is how the sukkah has to look, at least. But of course, you can have three and four walls. That's fine. The idea is that the walls do not move in the wind. So if you're using some fabric stretched between two poles or two on a frame, it has to be sturdy and not move in the wind. And there are ways to do that, and you can talk to your local rabbi how to make that happen. And then what do you use for the roof? For the roof, you have to use things that have grown from the ground. So you can use cut branches, leaves, or bamboo mats. All of those are fine for the roof, but you have to be able to see the stars and you have to be able to feel the elements. So if it's raining, it has to be able to rain into the sukkah. And the idea is that, once again, we're leaving our homes, our fancy possessions, and we're going into this temporary dwelling place for 7 days in Israel, 8 days outside of Israel, to show our trust in God after we committed to God in Rosh Hashanah. We crowned God as the king of the world on Rosh Hashanah, and we reaffirmed our commitment to serving him and not ourselves and not the society in general. Really, really recommitted ourselves to be servants of God. And then we took the time during the 10 days of tshuva to introspect and reflect on our actions. Do our actions actually align with this commitment? And on Yom Kippur, we've taken the time once again to take stock, let go of all the actions and behaviors that are not aligned with our commitment and our values. And we have taken it upon ourselves to do better going forward. And we've created a pius, a kapara. You know, Yom Kippur is from the word kapara, and Rashi in last week's Torah portion explains that kapara is really making amends. When you fight with somebody and then you come and you make amends and you reestablish the relationship and you're friends again, this is what kapara means. This is what Yom Kippur means. We've had some rifts in our relationship with God. We've had some issues with our relationship with God. And Yom Kippur, we sat down and we've ironed things out and we've reestablished the relationship and we're good to go with love and affirmation of this relationship going forward. And now we can celebrate. Now that we know that God forgave us for everything we've done wrong, and we have reaffirmed our values and our dedication to serving God, we are taking 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot to get our act together and to build the sukkah. And now we have a full week of spending time with God, trusting in God, and showing that our worldly possessions, our apartments, our houses, our cars are really less important to us. And what's important to us is being with God, even if that means sitting in a little hut outside. And it might be a little bit cold there. It might be a little bit windy there. Or if you're in Israel, it might be a little bit hot there, but it doesn't really matter. We're enjoying our time together. You know, when you remember yourself going out on dates, when you went out on a date with somebody you really loved, so it could have been windy or chilly or rainy or snowy or hot. Did you pay attention to the weather? Did you actually pay attention to the person you were with? And did the experience of being with that person and the loving relationship make you forget the weather around you? I think the same happens in the sukkah. There is a law that if sitting in the sukkah makes you upset, it makes you uncomfortable, then you don't have to sit in the sukkah. If it's rainy and you're feeling you're getting all wet, there is no point in sitting in the sukkah. You go into your house. But there is a part of it that if you feel uncomfortable and unhappy in the sukkah, it shows that there is, you know, something is not okay with the relationship. Like when you go out on a date and if the weather is bothering you more than the conversation and the relationship, so apparently it's not interesting enough. It's not, you know, close enough. And obviously I'm using this as an analogy. You know, if it's raining or snowing and you're in the sukkah, it's fine. You should go into your house and be comfortable. That's totally okay. But the idea is that we want to experience our relationship with God in a very close way. And the sukkah allows us to do so. And in doing that, we also show our trust in God. Yes, God, we trust you enough to leave our homes and spend 7 or 8 days together with you outside. But beyond that, it's a gorgeous, beautiful holiday. It's a holiday that kids love. Kids bring their art projects back from school and we hang them on the walls of the sukkah. And whether you have kids or don't, make the sukkah fun for yourself. What are some of the foods you like to bring in? Bring those in. Put up some artwork, some posters, whatever you like, you know, some pictures onto your sukkah walls. Make it a pleasant place for you. It's only a week, but make this week as pleasurable as possible for you. And when you sit in a sukkah, the smell of the schach, the roof, the branches is just overwhelming. And it's this beautiful, amazing feeling that I love. And for many, many people, myself included, Sukkot is one of our favorite holidays because it really creates this ambiance, this feeling that's hard to forget. And I want to take this one step further to something that Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says about the sukkah. He says that the sukkah is parallel to having almost a prophetic experience, Ruach HaKodesh, having divine spirit, which is the lowest level of prophetic experience. It's sort of like knowing something without knowing. So just having complete clarity, but it's not something you know intellectually. You just have something that God puts into your mind. And I think some of us, many of us have had this experience of, I don't know how I know this. I just know this so clearly because God has shown it to me. So this is sort of a taste of Ruach HaKodesh. We have our intellectual abilities, which is sort of the top of our experience. The intellect is considered to be the topmost quality of a person. Our mind is the highest part of our body. And in Judaism, it says that the parts of us, parts of our soul, that are above our body and actually higher up. And higher also means more inside. So the things we understand in our mind, but then there is this knowledge, this Ruach HaKodesh, there is this divine light that is above our head, and it sort of encompasses us. So Rabbi Nachman says that the sukkah is parallel to the Ruach HaKodesh, just like the sukkah encompasses you. You are in this ambiance, you are in this atmosphere, and creates a feeling and creates an experience for you. And it's not something you can put your finger on and say, okay, I know I can intellectually dissect and analyze why I feel this way in the sukkah. I just do. I feel inspired. I feel close. I feel amazing. So also you have this intellectual experience, which is not quite intellectually, just you have clarity and understanding, and it's God-given. It's not something you analyze or understand, or it's your work. It's God basically showing you the way. And sukkah is symbolic of God showing you the way in a way that has nothing to do with your intellect. It's really, really God showing you the way. But there is a prerequisite for that. And the prerequisite for that, says Rabbi Nachman, is guarding the seven openings of your head. And the seven openings of your head are your two nostrils, two ears, two eyes, and one mouth. When we are careful with what kind of information we'll let inside and certainly let outside, we guard our intellectual capacity and our capacity to process information and our capacity to see God's wisdom. And if we don't guard them, we contaminate ourselves, and then we're not open to seeing God and seeing divinely inspired knowledge and information. We have to be very clear not to hear false things, not to say false things, not to see things that are detrimental or that are against Torah values. And then if we protect our head, if we protect our intellect, if we protect our purity, then in the sukkah we can have an influx of divine inspiration that can show us the way that's way bigger than anything we can understand intellectually, where we'll have a sense of where to go. So in these days, as you're getting ready for Sukkot, take this time to cleanse yourself of everything that's bothering you and that's around you. And really plug it into the sukkah experience. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of political correctness and the fear that you might offend someone?
I'm not afraid to offend you.
Wow, look who's talking tough.
One has to be tough to keep sane today.
Hi, I'm Alan Skorsky.
And I'm Bayla Seabrow.
And join us every Wednesday for The Definitive Wrap as we interview the most sought-after guests and expose progressive trends that masquerade as enlightenment but actually destroy our freedoms.
We are the No Woke Zone, so buckle up to this exciting show.
Buckling up, but I'm driving.
Sure, you can drive, but I'm the navigator.
Tune in for the No Nonsense, The Definitive Wrap Show, every Wednesday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to our last third segment for this show. So this week's Torah portion, as I said, is the Torah portion Vizot HaBracha, and this is the blessing. It is the last portion of the Torah that just before dying, Moses blesses each one of the tribes of Israel, and then he passes away, And we know that after Moses passed away, the Jewish people went into the land of Israel. So this is it. This is the grand finale of the Torah. And this is the Torah portion that we should be reading on the last Shabbat of the week. But this is not how it works exactly. Instead, this Torah portion is actually never read on Shabbat. And it actually doesn't even have a Shabbat of its own. It's very interesting. So the Torah portion of Vizodah Bracha, this blessing, the last portion of the Torah, is read on Simchat Torah. It's the holiday of the ending of the annual cycle of Torah portion reading. And it will be next week. We'll discuss it in a week from now. And on this last Shabbat, it falls out on Sukkot. And there's a special Sukkot reading that is read every year. So really, Vizodah Bracha does not have a week of its own. And it's extremely interesting that Vizodah Bracha has a message. And the message is that it's only when all the Jewish people come together and are together that God can be king. In chapter 33 of Dvarim, Deuteronomy, verse number 5, it says, "And in Yeshurun there will be a king when the heads of the nation gather together and the tribes of Israel are together." So Yeshurun is another name for the Jewish people. And Rashi, the commentator, the leading commentator on the Torah, says that only when the Jewish people come together and are one unit and there is peace among them, then God can be the king. And when they fight against each other, when they fight amongst each other, God really does not want to be king over Jewish people. And then after that, the next thing that he does, that Moses does, is bless each and every one of the tribes. So this is an extremely interesting point, and it really mirrors something we do on Sukkot very closely. Each one of the 12 tribes of Israel has its specific, unique way in the service of God. It is said that in the Holy Temple there were 12 gates, and each one of the tribes had a special gate, and each one of the tribes had a specific prayer formula that it would say that was different from the other tribes. And each one of the tribes had a specific way in serving God. Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg says that there is a verse that many people usually say, "Spare the rod, spoil the child." The word for rod in Hebrew, shevet, is the same word as for a tribe. And, you know, tribal leaders used to have rods or, walking sticks, which were a sign of their status. So the word for rod and for tribe is the same, shevet. So Rabbi Ginsburg reads this verse, "Spare the rod, spoil the child," differently. He says, "Spare the tribe, spoil the child." When you prevent the child from finding his own tribe, when you prevent the child from finding his or her own way of serving God, and each one of us has a different way, the 12 tribes, 12 ways of serving God, and each person has their own way to serve God, one of those 12 tribes, the different tribes we belong to. So if you prevent the child from finding their tribe, from finding their way in the service of God, you're basically spoiling the child. You are spoiling his or her education, and you're not allowing them to become who they are. So it's interesting that on the one hand, Moses says, it's only when the Jewish people come together in one unit, in unified whole, that God can be king over Israel. And on the other hand, he blesses every single one of the tribes with a specific blessing that is appropriate for that tribe's service of God. And this reinforces the message that unity does not mean we have to all be the same, think the same, do the same, say the same, look the same. On the opposite, each and every one of us has to take hold, take ownership, take responsibility for his or her unique way in the service of God. And as we do that, We also need to understand and keep in mind that the other people are doing the same. The other people are also taking ownership of the unique service of God. And the only thing that's important is that both of us have the same goal, that we're both committed to serving God. And we might do it a little bit differently and putting emphasis on different things. But if we're equally committed to the overarching value of serving God and we put egos aside, then we can come together and all serve God together, and God can be king over us. And this idea is very closely related to another mitzvah of Sukkot. And another mitzvah of Sukkot is the four species. It's kind of a weird mitzvah. It's a kind of a weird commandment. What do? We take four species. We take a citron. A citron on an etrog. In Hebrew, it's called an etrog. In English, it's called a citron. It's a fruit that looks a little bit like a lemon, but not quite. And it's not a lemon. And we take a palm branch, myrtle branches, willow branches, and we tie the three kinds of branches together, hold them in one hand, we hold the citron in the other hand, we bring them together, make a blessing, and we wave them. So, interesting. Once again, very colorful, very experiential, lots of sounds and smells, very, you know, kids love it, but what's the point exactly? And the point is that the four kinds of species or plants represent four types of people that all have to come together. So citron, it has great taste. You can't really eat it, but if you cook it in a jam, it tastes great. And by the way, today don't do that because they're full of pesticides. But if it was organic grown, citrons are amazing in a jam. So they taste great and they have good smell. And they're symbolic of people who learn Torah and do a lot of good deeds. So that's the citron. The palm branch doesn't really have a smell, but it has excellent taste. You know, the dates taste amazing. And that represents people who learn Torah, but they don't necessarily spend their time doing a lot of good deeds. And then the myrtle branches have amazing smell, but they don't have any taste. There's no fruit there. And then symbolize people who have great deeds. They're very involved in the community. They do a lot of good for the community, but they're not necessarily Torah scholars. And then the willow represents a person who has no taste, no smell. They don't learn Torah, they don't learn Torah, they're not a scholar of any kind, and they're not exactly involved in the community. They're not, you know, doing their fair share. They don't do anything for the community. They're just involved with themselves. So we take the four kinds of plants that represent these four kinds of people, from the most upright citizens who are Torah scholars and also very involved in the community, to the kinds of people who are basically just in it for themselves, they have no Torah knowledge, and they're also not doing anything for their fellow human beings. And we bring them all together saying that really we're all one. We cannot write any one person off. We have to all be together as one nation, one group. And only in this way can we celebrate this holiday. And only in this way can we serve God together. Because remember, we just recommitted to serving God this past 2 weeks. So now we're here to show our faith in God and take the joy of this holiday into the year to serve God in joy. Because it says that the joy of Sukkot enables you to get to the same high level in the service of God and your spiritual development as the tshuva, the repentance process of Yom Kippur. You can do the same with the joy of Sukkot than you can do with the fasting in Yom Kippur. But that requires everybody to come together. The citron, the palm, the myrtle, the willow, the scholars, the people who are very involved in the community and give a lot of themselves, the people who are not scholars and don't give any of themselves at all. We cannot write any one person off. We have to all come together and do our work together and see the good in each other. And only then can our joy be complete. Only then can our celebration be complete. Only then God really looks down at us and says, kids, You're doing amazing. I'm so happy with you. I'm so pleased. I have so much nachat. I have so much pleasure from you. Yes, even family, if there's a kid who's not so involved, a kid who's not so connected, a kid who really doesn't give to his siblings, and who is not so involved with going off at home, you can not write that kid off. You cannot kick them out of the house. You have to have them part of the family. And the same is true for the Jewish family. The same is true for our people. God does not want to see any one person cast off. We all have to stay together. So with this, I would like to wish you my best wishes for the holiday of Sukkot. It should be meaningful, pleasurable, fun, amazing for you and your family. Take this week to enjoy yourself, to just have pure, unadulterated joy, because God is giving you this commandment to be happy on the holiday of Sukkot. And I hope to see you next week to discuss more of this amazing holiday and to get ready for the holiday of Simchat Torah. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.